Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars. And we're super excited because we have the world's most interesting, or second most interesting, after Pete, guest here today, Chuck Zito.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me.
So for the five people that don't know you, Maria, do you want to tell them a little about Chuck?
Well, he is, I don't know, a jack of all trades, if that's the right word, but he was president of the Hells Angels. He was a stunt guy, an actor, a writer. He had a radio show. And my 8-year-old daughter's favorite thing about him, he was also a contestant on Chopped.
And I want to ask you about that. So you're a Hells Angels. You're hanging around with all these big, tough motorcycle guys. And you go in, and I don't know where big, tough motorcycle guys hang out, but I'm sure that it's sweaty and there's beer. And you say, yo, I'm going to be flambéing on TV. I mean, how did that go over?
Well, I was actually out of the club already. I quit the club before I did Chopped.
But was that a requirement?
What's that? No. Yeah, if you're going to be on Chop, you got to quit.
I thought they kicked you out.
Yeah, no, nobody kicked me out. It's funny because I got a call and from the people who are, running Chopped. And they said, we want you to have you on this TV show, Chopped, about cooking. And they said, we have, Danica Patrick, who's a race car champion, and Tiki Barber, who's 2-time Heisman winner trophy, and Natalie Coughlin, 12-time Olympic swimmer. And I says, well, what do you want me for? They said, well, everybody knows you. You've been on TV. You've been a stunt guy. You're a fighter. You're a street fighter. We want to have you. I said, you know what? I don't know if I want to do that. Then they said, well, we're going to give you $5,000 for the day. I said, what time do you want me there? So that's how I got unchopped.
See, and I'm impressed because my cooking involves I can boil water, and I'm really, really good on the microwave.
Well, I can cook, but I don't.
Well, my requirements before that, I was cooking on a grill, hot dogs and hamburgers. So I'm saying, well, how am I going to pull this off? But I did.
My mom taught me that the best thing to make for dinner is reservations.
It's true. We have reservations after this. So I know a lot of people who listen to the podcast are really interested in being more than ordinary. That's why that's the name of it. And you have done what a lot of people always talk like they want to do, but you actually did it. You were in the Hells Angels, you were really heavily involved in that, and then you're living in New York and you decide, I want to be a stunt guy in Hollywood, and you just do it, even though you don't let the fact that there's an entire continent between you and what you want to do. And then you go from stunt work to acting. A lot of people say they want to do that, but you actually did it. And then you wrote a book, and you had a reality show, and you've been on Sons of Anarchy, the TV show. What is it that you think separates you from the average person who has wishes but not plans? How do you execute all that?
Well, I just put my mind to it and said, well, I could do that. But it's actually the Hells Angels opened the doors for me. When I became a Hells Angel in 1979, Sandy Alexander was the president of New York City Hells Angels. And he was also a stuntman in the movie business. So they were doing this movie called The Dead Ringer with Sharon Meatloaf. And he needed 18 guys with motorcycles. So, of course, he got the Hells Angels to do it. And I caught the stunt bug after I did it. And I just kept doing stunts. And after a while, I says, you know what? These guys act like I do every day. So I'm going to act, be an actor. And then I started acting. And my first series was actually Oz, HBO Oz, the prison show. And I started doing that. I had a tattoo on my chest as Hells Angels. And I was the head of the Sicilian mob in prison. So they were saying, well, this guy's Hells Angels. What's he doing with the Sicilians? But I didn't look like a biker, so Tom Fontana says, I'm going to make you with the mob. And that's how I became on HBO series Oz.
Well, and what are some of the things, obviously, you talk about how you look, but is that ever an issue? How do you overcome that? Because sometimes probably people come in and they have this concept of what you're going to be like or, who you are. How do you also convince people, that you can do things they probably don't think you can?
There's another story out there because there's a movie called Gia with Angelina Jolie, if you ever watched that. And that was about Gia Carangi. She was 17, supermodel, 17 years old. I got a call and he says they wanted a biker. They want a Hell's Angel, with the long hair, fat, big belly and everything else. And so I sent a bunch of pictures to them. And I says, I just sent mine just for the hell of it. Because, of course, I didn't look like a biker. I was clean cut. I had shorter hair and I had everything. At one time, I mean, I had long hair and a beard and everything else. But at this time, I was clean cut, short hair. And the next thing I know, I got the call. And I wound up doing Gia with Angelina Jolie. Yeah, it's not that always that stereotype, you know, that biker that they want to see. I mean, I remember the first Hell's Angel I ever met. And the guy was like 6'4", 400 pounds. And I said, damn, they all look like this guy. So, of course, when I went down, of course, there was a lot of clean-cut guys. And, of course, the stereotype guys, too, with the long hair and the beer bellies and everything else.
So out of all the things that you've done, the reality show, the Sons of Anarchy, the stunt work, the writing, do you have a favorite? Is the favorite whatever pays you money? Or?
I like the acting. I like being behind the camera. And I took enough falls as a stuntman. I like the acting. After I was doing Sons of Anarchy and Oz, I just felt that was a better in for me. But then I wrote my book. I wrote an autobiography in 2002 about my life story. Of course, that ended in 98. And from 98 till now, I was supposed to write a second book, but I didn't want to. Yeah, I went through a bad divorce and everything, and after 30 years with my wife, and I just didn't want to say anything negative towards her or anything, so I didn't do the second book.
I always wonder about that. You know, I've had a couple of friends that their parents got divorced after 40 or 50 years, and I just think, if I could put up with my husband for 50 years, I'd just wait till he died, you know?
Yeah, well, it was amazing because I joined another club before. We actually started a club before I was a Hell's Angel. And it was a fad thing, myself and a couple of guys, once I got a motorcycle. It was Hell's Angels who inspired me, first of all. I was 12 years old sitting in a movie theater and watched Hell's Angels on Wheels with Jack Nicholson and Sonny Barga. You know, I caught that bug, you know, like the same way with the stunts. And I went home and I built a mini bike. I took a Schwinn bicycle and I took a lawnmower motor and I put it together and I built a mini bike. And then I went to Jack's Army Navy store for $6. I bought a dungaree jacket and I wrote the opposite of Hell's Angels on it, Heaven's Devils. And I started riding around in my neighborhood, 12 years old, on my mini bike. And that's how I started. So when I met them in the gym, because Sandy Alexander was a professional boxer, I was boxing too at the same time, in the Golden Gloves back in New York, I met him. And then we started talking, and I says I was in a club, and he said he was the president of Hell's Angels, and we just started. I used to paint cars and motorcycles also. So I painted his motorcycle. The Hell's Angels saw that. I started painting their bikes, and the next thing you know, I became a Hell's Angel. And that's how I got in.
You know, would you say, it seems like you've had a lot of phases. So you've been in this, and then you've moved to that. And was it a conscious thing? Have you thought, you know, I'm done with this part of my life and I'm moving on to the next thing? Or was it more of a gradual transition?
I became Hell's Angel in 1979. I was Hell's Angel for 25 years. And then after a while, I just wanted to do other things. And, you know, because the club, you have to do certain, you know, you have to go for 4 runs a year and it's mandatory to go and everything. It was just putting a lot of pressure on me and I was doing the acting too at the same time. And that's when I decided it was time to quit the club and focus on my other things. And, that's what I did.
Are you one of the 125 million people playing computer games via Steam? If so, get on Steam and get Seven Generation Games' newly released Fish Lake version 2.0. The game features 178 documented enhancements. 178! It's fun, it makes you smarter, and you should, get it now. It's only $9.99, not even 10 bucks. Go on, we'll wait. Okay, we can't wait that long because we have to get back to the podcast. But go to Steam, get Fish Lake. We've got the link below here, or just go and search the title Fish Lake on Steam.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Marie Burns-Ortiz.
I'm Anne Maria DeMars. And we still have with us our fabulous, amazing, fascinating guest,
Chuck Zito.
So we were talking on the break, Chuck, about how you have been in jail and come out of it and been amazingly successful. Yes. And I know a lot of people, I have had friends, my friends' kids, who have been in jail, come out, and they end up kind of being on this merry-go-round, going right back, like a very unfun merry-go-round. And often they say things like, well, I'd like to change, but nobody give me a job, I can't get a break, or, you know, a lot of people have been in jail for meth or drugs, and oh, but all my friends do drugs, or I don't want to be a goody two shoes. And you're as far from like the goody two shoes stereotype I can imagine.
Yes. You know what? I've been around more drugs between the club and also all the clients, the celebrity clients I work for. You know, they do a lot of drugs, but that's just a cop out to me. Because you know what? I never drank, I never smoked, I never took a drug in my life. I've never even tried it. So I can't say, yeah, I'm going to do it because my friends do it. That's a cop-out to me. And I just hate people say that bullshit. But yes, I went to jail. I went in 1985. I went with myself and 20 other Hells Angels to Japan, Tokyo, Japan, to visit another club who wanted to become Hells Angels. So I was out there already. But when I was out there during my stay out there, they raided my home. They had a big nationwide arrest, and they arrested 150 people, and 33 of them members of the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club. I was one of them that they were looking for. Myself and another guy, Bert, stayed out in Japan because we wanted to see what the charges were against us, and we didn't want to get caught on a plane. So we found out that they arrested me. They said I made a telephone call to a guy who sold a pound of methamphetamine. That was my charge. I never made a phone call. I was in British Columbia with Mickey Rourke doing a movie called Year of the Dragon. I had my hotel receipts. I had my phones, everything. I never made the phone call. But yet they wanted to put me into the conspiracy because I was the president at the time of my charter. And we were there for 2 months in Japan. And I'm back and forth with my wife and the lawyer and everything. We decided to surrender to the American embassy in Tokyo because we didn't want to get caught on a plane. We wanted to show good faith and surrender so we would get bail when we came home. So we surrendered to the American embassy. They said they put us on a plane the next day to go home. They handed us over to Japanese police, and I was in prison for 4 months in a Japanese prison waiting for extradition. And then finally we got extradited. Four marshals came to get me. At the time, I didn't know it, but you're not supposed to be handcuffed on a commercial flight. And I was chained, shackled, everything on this flight for 14 hours. So when I got back, I went in front of the judge. They denied me bail. I said, he says, you're a risk of flight and a danger community. I said, how could I be a risk of flight if I surrendered 10,000 miles away? Risk of flight, no bail. Not $1 million, not 10 million, nothing, no bail at all. And they wanted me to take a plea. And I says, I never did anything. I never made the phone call. I'm not taking a plea to shit. They said, well, we'll give you a year if you take the plea. And at the time, when I thought about it, I already did 4 months, and that counts. I would have did another 4 months, and I would have been out. But myself and Bert, they wanted to give him 3 years and me a year. We both told him to go scratch their ass, and we wanted to be tough guys. So we went to court. He got 14 years, I got 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I was supposed to get time served. What happened was after, I forgot to mention this, while I was in prison, they would not give me bail. Nothing, not a million, nothing. After I took the plea, they let me out the next day on bail, and I was supposed to get time served when I went to court. I wound up getting 10 years. And that blew my whole day, man, because we had a reservations at a restaurant. My family was there. Cheetah Rivera was there. Dina Aiello. A lot of celebrities were in the courtroom on my behalf. And I just turned to my wife. I says, cancel the reservations. And I wound up, I got 10 years. I did 6 years in prison. And not just one prison. I did 6 years in 19 different prisons. They kept, if you have a fight, they don't want the both ears on there because there's retaliation, so they transfer both ears. I wound up having like 10 good fights in prison and other things, and I was in 19 different prisons in my 6 years.
What did you think about it? I mean, that's a long time to be in prison. You know, obviously people are, but you know, what were you thinking throughout that time?
You know, sweetheart, I was in a Japan prison. That was the first time. I mean, I got locked up before for a fight or something overnight, or a couple of hours, but I was never really in a real prison. And when I got to Japan, but I have to say, one thing about Japanese prisons, they're immaculate, they're clean. You walk out of you get out of your cell when they take you out, there's a little, like a foot pad that you have to walk on, and you could hear a pin drop. That's how the prisons are there, and they're very strict, because not a lot of crime in Japan. And they have a lot of Yakuza there, you know, the Japanese mafia, and those are the guys in there. And guys, you know, like myself and some other guys who were involved in drugs out there and everything. But when I said, wow, this is crazy, man. I said, I've never, you know, been something like this. I said, I can't open the cell and have my milk and cookies at night and shit, you know. And I wound up doing, after 4 months, they came to get me and they brought me to, to MCC in New York City. When I got there, it was like a country club. The guys were playing pool. They had a couple of TVs. They were screaming. They were everything. In Japan, you do not say a peep. Nothing. They run it like a military. It's crazy. That's why they don't have that much crime out there. But when I got to the United States, I said, shit. At least I'll have some you know, a little better time here. And plus, all my co-defendants were in the same prison. So we had 33 Hells Angels in the same facility.
Did you think about what you were going to do when you got out a lot?
Well, I'll tell you, it sucked. You know what? Six Christmases, six New Years, six birthdays, everything. My wife, my daughter, everything I missed. I missed her, you know, 16th birthday. I missed her 18th birthday and things like that. So it really sucked. Yeah, my mind was always on the street. I never got, you know, used to a prison. But I'll tell you what, the day I got out of jail, Sean Penn gave me a job the next day. And I was able to go back to being a bodyguard because, like I said, after I was a stuntman, I started my own bodyguard business called Charlie's Angels in 1980. And I bodyguarded everybody from Sean Penn to Charlie Sheen to Mickey Rourke to Cher to Pamela Anderson, everybody you could think of. Michael Jackson, Charles Bronson, De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, everybody. So I was able to go back into that the day I got out. And that was because Sean Penn. And he did a movie called he was doing a movie at the time they just finished called State of Grace with Gary Oldman. It was a great movie. And Sean, not only being a great actor, he was a great guy, and to give me a job. And I started going right back into the bodyguard business, and, you know, I just started like I was never in jail.
You know, I think one person we got to get on this podcast sometime is Father Greg Boyle. I don't know if you know who he is. He founded Homeboy Industries. But one thing that he says is nothing stops a bullet like a job, and how the big thing for getting kids out of gangs in L.A., is giving them jobs. But I think in general, maybe for anybody who gets out of prison, just having that job, having somebody saying,
oh, yes.
I believe in
yes.
you, exactly. and here's your way forward,
exactly.
helps.
You know, I happened to call Mickey Rourke because I was always calling, you know, you're allowed phone calls, so I was always on the street, and I was calling all my other clients and you know, Liza Minnelli and Mickey Rourke and everything, and Sean happened to be there. So he got on the phone, hey, how you doing? I says, well, how am I doing? I'm in jail, but I'm getting out soon. He goes, when are you getting out? I said, well, actually next week. He goes, well, you know what? When you get out, I want to put you right to work. And that was great because he didn't know me a thing. And I always, you know, I'm always indebted to Sean. In fact, when I wrote my book, he wrote the foreword for me, which was great.
It's always good to hear good things about people in Hollywood because Maria and Pete both know how much I talk trash about people in Hollywood because I think most of them can act like they like you or act like you're a friend because they're actors. And we keep mentioning Pete, so my buddy Pete Antico is here. He's also a friend of Chuck's, and we're going to have Pete on the podcast next week.
I'm glad you said that about Hollywood, because in Hollywood, the biggest bullshit is in town. Yeah, I'm from New York. I still live in New York. But you come out here, Hollywood's the biggest bullshitters. They lie to you. They love you. But as soon as you turn your back, boom, they put that knife right in your back. And so it's a very unbelievable town, to tell you the truth. You know, in New York, if they don't like you, they tell you to their face. Over here, they just bullshit you. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? And they turn you around, like, fuck that guy, man, you know, all that shit. So, yeah, they're the biggest bullshitters. So it's something to get through this town in the first place. But I was lucky because the people who hired me, they knew I was a Hell's Angel, and they still hired me. But they knew one thing, that I could keep my mouth shut. Like I said, if I ever wrote a book, I'd make $1 billion. Not a billion. Because all the things I know and the secrets I know about all these celebrities, because you got to realize the closest thing to the celebrity is their bodyguard. If they're sleeping in one room, you're sleeping in the adjoining room. If you're with them here, you're with them here, you're with them there. I worked for actors who were married that were fucking around on their wives. I worked for actresses who were married, fucking around, and I always kept my mouth shut. And that's why they always called me back, because they knew that I would never indulge their secrets or their whatever they had. And that's why I was successful in the bodyguard business.
like I said, if you are interested in doing the billion-dollar book, I'm available.
All right. Well, I only have two questions left because we took up a lot of your time and I'm super, super, super appreciative. One is about the radio show because everybody talks about that. You were on the Howard Stern channel. And so how did you get into that and how did you like it?
I used to do Howard. I mean, I was one of his most frequent guests. And we had such a good rapport with each other that he gave me my own radio show on Howard 101 on Sirius Satellite Radio. And I was actually there for 6 years. And it was great. And I would just talk about everything. It was called Chuck Zito's View, like the girls on TV, their view, and my view. We talk about whatever. We talk about fights. We talk about cars, motorcycles, girls, everything. And it was just great. They said that Howard had 20 million people listening, and then I had 10 million. So people, 10 million people used to tune into my show. And it was great. I loved it.
So we're doing, I mean, this isn't a radio show, but it's a podcast. But what advice, what did you learn from that? What advice would you give people that are either looking to do a radio show or a podcast or something like that? I mean, how do you fill 6 years worth of stuff, you know, to talk about?
Well, that's what I said. I just would talk about myself, the things I've done, the places I've been, the people I met, my clients. If I had a job that day or week or something happened somewhere else, I would just get on and talk about it. And we used to have people who call in. We would take their calls. And it was just great. It was great. It was awesome. I had some great music. I'm a big Elvis fan. So as soon as you tuned in, it said, if you're looking for trouble, you came to the right place by Elvis. And I had everybody, Joan Jett, you know, Bad Reputation, of course, that Rhonda always comes into. And I got Pete did his great documentary that I went to the other night, the premiere, and it's awesome. And I just had a great time on my radio show. And no matter where I go, everybody says, how come you're off? Why don't they put you back? I have so many fans all over the world that used to listen to the show.
I can see why, because you've got all these fascinating stories. So now I want to ask you for one last piece of advice.
Okay.
Because Mari and I have been talking with Pete about doing a reality show. And I know you had done one. So if you could give us advice on what to do, what not to do.
I've done a few. I was actually the first one to have a reality show 18 years ago. I would have had the first reality show, and it was called Street Justice. They had three shows on TV, Judge Judy, Judge Joe Brown, and Judge Mills Lane. I was the fourth judge of the streets. I would listen to your disputes, and I would make a decision.
You slap the loser upside the head?
I would be for the underdog. Like, say, the Warring Neighbors or something. If it was a little guy, I'd tell the other guy, hey, you want to jump in a ring with me, the octagon? Let's do it. But believe it or not, that the feds, before they supposed to air it, this night before they air it, the feds went to USA Network and they told them, we do not want a Hell's Angel to have his own reality show. And they pulled it. So right there, you know, there was a, even though the club opened some doors for me, it closed some behind me. And that was one of them. Like I said, I would have been the first one 18 years ago. And I believe it would still be on the show today because it was just a great, and Pete came to my first, when I did the pilot for it, right here in California.
All right. Well, we're planning and we're talking with Pete about doing a reality show in our company. So I think Chuck would be really interesting. So we'd have to get him in somehow. He could do voices for the game. He could be like the bad guy or something. So yeah, we'd have to find a job for Chuck in the company. We could, bodyguard.
Anytime there's a dispute, we call him in.
Yes.
Contract negotiations.
But we did another show after that called Criminal Lives. It was about all these street gangs. They were sending in videos, real videos. And I was a host. I said, I'm Chuck Zito. I'll take you to a place you've never been before. I went to the underground, these shanties where everybody was just living and everything. And where they were doing drugs and shooting up drugs. And where they were doing Russian roulette with each other. It was crazy. And then even the cops stopped that. Where are we getting our videos from? I did another one called... what's the other one I did? I just so many of them. It's crazy that none of them ever happened. But now, believe it or not, January 12th, I have a meeting for another show. So that might happen. We'll see what happens.
Well, we wish you luck.
Thank you so much.
We would watch it.
I'd hope so. Watch it or else.
So I think that's where we want to end today's podcast. Thank you very much for coming in. We would love to have you back. And I'm serious, too. We always need, like, voiceover actors for our games.
Okay.
And, you know, Jonah, our amazing sound guy behind us, has been working really hard on, like, the new game, Fish Lake, that came out to add sound effects and that to it, but we have some contemporary games coming out this year where it's set in modern times, so we'll have to have them run into a Hell's Angel. Why not? Maria is our lead designer. She leads the
Excel's
design.
Excel's Angel.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe just a big biker-ish guy.
Yeah, a biker guy. Excel's Angel. I quit the club actually, now it's 12 years now. Wow, after 25 years, it's 12 years ago I quit.
Yeah, about half the games are, half the users are in schools. About half the time it's kids playing at home, but half the time it's in schools. And often the schools are very strict about things. And then you get the crazy people like, well, the Indians are shooting deer. Can't they get down and make friends with them? It's like, no.
They got to eat too.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. So anybody listening that wants to buy our games, you can go to 7generationgames.com/buy. You can buy a game for yourself, make you smarter. You can buy a game for your school, give them as a gift for those people you forgot at Christmas, you slacker.
And if you don't, we're going to send Chuck to your house.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7generationgames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, generationgames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7generationgames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.